Hey everyone, I know you've heard me speak about microdosing and how much I love it. And I'm talking about microdosing THC. I love it. And that's why I love our sponsor, microdose.com. Microdose gummies are incredible. They deliver perfect entry-level doses of THC that help you feel just the right amount of good. And when I mean just the right amount of good, I mean in so many situations. Anxiety, sleep, focus, pain, relaxation. There are so many different strains and they're really helpful. And I have recommended microdose.com to so many people. And you know what they say to me? Thank you. Thank you. Thank you. Thank you. Don't be afraid of microdosing. Go to microdose.com and you'll learn all about microdosing THC. These gummies feel amazing. They taste amazing. I have used them to get me into the zone I need to write. I've used them at night after a stressful day or a stressful show to relax. I have also said to family members, please take a gummy right now. And they've said, oh, good idea. So check it out. Check it out because they're fantastic. And I'm not like a big weed person. I mean, I used to be. And I do enjoy weed every now and then. But I love these gummies. And I take them with me everywhere. So check it out. Don't be afraid. They're all natural. They're fantastic. And you deserve it. So what are you going to do? You're going to do something that is fantastic. You're going to get 30% off your first order. 30% off. That's a lot. Plus free shipping today at microdose.com. Use promo code JUDYGOLD, JUDYGOLD. It's available nationwide. They deliver it to your door. That is microdose.com. Promo code JUDYGOLD for 30% off and free shipping. Do it. Go to microdose.com. Promo code JUDYGOLD. You deserve it. You deserve it. And you know what else? You're welcome.
Tropft uns den Regen auf mein Kopf. Pink wie ein Deckerbus, ist die kleine Fahrt im Topf. Geht mir kein Sach mit, die.
Hey everyone, welcome to Kill Me Now with Judy Gold. I'm your host, Judy Gold. I'm Jewish. This week on Kill Me Now, I'm so excited because Jocelyn Chia, if you haven't been following the news, because there's so much other stupid fucking news, but a joke was posted. You're going to hear all about it during the interview, but she posted a joke on Instagram, and now she is from Singapore, and now they want to arrest her for this bit that she did. And this is right up my alley, as you know, because I wrote a book. Yes, I can say that when they come for the comedians, we're all in trouble, all about this. And I did a show called Yes, I Can Say That off Broadway, which was a very big hit. And so I am so excited. We talk all about her history. It's fascinating because she, although born here in the United States, grew up in Singapore, and just, it's such a great conversation. So you're going to, it's part one and part two. Today is part one, or this week is part one. You're going to fucking love it. I'm telling you right now. Now, I just wanted to say a couple things before we play the interview. Number one, the fucking submarine, these like, seriously, you're going to get on a submarine when they're steering it using a PlayStation. The submarine was being steered using a, is being steered correct grammar? Okay. Well, the steering device was a PlayStation controller. Okay. I have several in my house for my young children who are not young anymore. And it's fucking ridiculous. The fact that these people just think that their money makes them invincible. And now that 19-year-old kid and his father and the 19-year-old kid didn't want to go on it. And the father was like, oh, come on, because, you know, he's fucking rich. So really, you're going underwater to see a ship that went underwater. Using a PlayStation fucking controller. All right, I can't. So that's what happened. But of course, all these migrants are missing, hundreds of them. They were on a boat, but no one gives a shit about them because they're not rich, you know, billionaire men who have a little, hey, this is my hobby. You know, it's my hobby. Okay, so that's that. I just wanted to say that. I also want to say happy Pride. Elisa and I went to this really great reading of Alison Bechdel's Dykes to Watch Out For, and it was fucking great, and we had such a good time. Directed by Lee Silverman. Lisa Krohn was the narrator. There were so many great stars. Amber Ruffin was in it. Oh, she's not Jewish, but whatever. I just felt like doing that. Carrie Brownstein. I mean, it was just like, it was amazing. Okay, so we did that for Pride. I'm now in Provincetown working. And I just also wanted to mention that I can't stand Robert F. Kennedy Jr. or whatever. Is it F? No, he's not. Is he an F? Did you hear Elisa? She's in the background. So Robert F. Kennedy, I can't stand him. He's a fucking anti-vaxxer. Now, you know, I hate Twitter. I'm done with Twitter. I know I say that, but I really can't stand it. It's so fucking negative. I have enough negativity. Like, I can't. And then now he has videos of him doing push-ups. Oh, because I vote according to how many fucking push-ups you can do. That's what I do. I'm like, oh, you can do more push-ups than Joe Biden? Okay. He's an anti-vaxxer. He's, you know, in bed with Elon Musk and Steve Bannon and Roger Stone. Fuck him. He's an asshole. Okay? Okay, so that's that. That was annoying me. There was one other thing that was annoying me. Well, I did love that Marjorie Taylor Greene called Lauren Beaucunt a little bitch. I love that they're doing, you know, impeachment hearing. Well, they're trying to do an impeachment hearing against Biden for being a president. Hunter Biden, by the way, paid his back taxes and pleaded guilty to having a gun when he wasn't supposed to because he was using drugs. But he pleaded guilty and his father loves him. And these motherfuckers are like, I mean, look at your fucking kids, Donnie. Look at them. Jared and Ivanka Hunt have billions of dollars from I hate them. Donald Jr. is obviously a cokehead. Allegedly. I don't want to get in trouble, but hello. They stole money from the Trump charity. Like, shut the fuck up. What is going on? I can't. It's just going to make me crazy. Okay, so I don't know. I guess that's my opening. Do I have anything? There was one other thing that annoyed me. Elise is here with a fan, a gay fan, a pride fan that we got in Israel. It has Hebrew on it and...
hot today.
Yeah, it's hot today. Listen, the other thing is, okay, Pride, it's too long. It's like, oh, I'm done. Okay, I'm very proud. Pride, pride, pride. But I feel like I have to go to every event and I have to be proud. And yeah, I might get a pair of Pride sneakers because they're going to go on sale. Anyway, so that's it. That's all I have to say. You know why I'm stalling right now? Because there's one thing, something else that I wanted to talk to you about and I can't fucking remember what it is. Okay. Oh, yes. I did want to say this whole thing in Ukraine in Russia with the Wagner, all I'm thinking about is Wagner, the composer, and Tristan and Isolde, like that opera. That's all. Every time they're like, and Wagner, I'm like, oh, he came in with a piano and an orchestra and he's going to take over. He's going to take over conducting Russia? Okay. That was my other thing. Apparently not that funny because Elisa had no reaction to it. Anyway, but it's time. It's time for you to listen to part one of my amazing interview with Jocelyn Chia. You are going to fucking love it. I'm telling you, it's like really fascinating. So you sit back, you relax, and you enjoy part one of my interview with Jocelyn Chia. Okay, everybody. Welcome to Kill Me Now with Judy Gold. I am so excited. You know, I usually plan my guests out way in advance, and you know that I'm a free speech advocate. I wrote a book about free speech and comedy that you should all get if you haven't fucking gotten it. But this incredibly accomplished woman's story and very funny stand-up comedian who's been in the news lately, I'm getting her while this issue is hot, and I'm just so thrilled to talk to her because she exemplifies exactly what I have talked about in my book and on my show. And ladies and gentlemen, what the fuck was that? Ladies, gentlemen, and they, thems. That's what I say now, Jocelyn. Jocelyn Chia is here. Woo! I'm so excited. Now, Jocelyn,
hello,
you're
everybody.
Fucking, first of all, you're hilarious.
Oh, thank you, Judy. You are too.
Thank you. I've been doing this for 40 fucking years, Jocelyn. 40. I started when I was 19. I'm 60. So like I'm taking a year off for the times I didn't perform. But anyway, Jocelyn is a very funny, well, she's an extremely accomplished person. You're extremely accomplished, but you are now in the news, and I'm talking about international news, because of a joke you told that you've been telling for years. And, you know, we all post on the Instagram and the TikTok because, unfortunately, we have to in order to get people to come see us. It's now the whole game has changed in stand-up, where we used to go on the road and there was no social media, no, and I talk about this a lot on the podcast, nothing. There was nothing except that hour you got on stage at night and you just prepared all day for that. And everyone that came to the show saw the material. And that was it. So, but now with the social media and cancel culture, we have one of the most incredible stories. Now, I always like to talk about people's childhoods, and I just want to say you grew up in Singapore. Your father's is an engineer.
Study engineering. Oh
well, you know, I do this research.
Because he's cool like that. But you're right. You went to MIT, so I understand why you thought he was
MIT.
An engineer.
So there we get the genes right there, the fucking brilliant genes. Your brother's an engineer, is that correct?
Nobody.
Oh, God. I read this whole fucking bio of you. That's probably all wrong. Okay.
Was it created by ChatGPT? Because my dad has been experimenting with what ChatGPT would say about
no
me.
No way.
Yeah. Like he got ChatGPT to write a poem about me. It's quite funny.
Yeah, I want to hear the poem.
I want to hear the poem. Okay. Here's the poem about Jocelyn Chia created by ChatGPT. Jocelyn Chia, a funny lady with a mic, making crowds laugh with her comedic might. From Singapore to New York City, she's quite the sight. Her humor's sharp as a surgeon's knife. A law graduate turned comedian, leaving law to pursue her dream of fun. Entertaining people with her quick wit on demand. Jocelyn Chia, a name to remember. That one's a little wonky. She's a woman breaking barriers, a leader in the industry, a true trailblazer. Through laughter, she'll break down all the walls. All right, maybe just the first stanza was
good.
Yeah,
I know. Then it got, we lost it. But it's all true, Jocelyn. It's all true.
Yeah, it's pretty impressive. Yeah. It's all true. It didn't say my dad's an engineer. So.
Okay, look, this is what I got. Now, did you go to Raffles Girl School in Singapore?
No, is that what you saw?
Raffles Girl School.
That's hilarious. I mean, it's the number one girls' school in the country, so I could see why whatever wonky news site came
out
with that.
Okay, wait, here's more. You were involved in debate, drama, and choir. Yeah.
Choir? I can't.
Wait, this
shit
is a good one. You swam. You were a swimmer for the country. You were a national swimmer.
Oh, there's a Jocelyn Yeo. There's another Jocelyn who was more famous than me at the time. Now I'm more famous than her. And everyone will make Jocelyn Yeo jokes about me. But that's hilarious. The attribute of her prowess to me.
So can you just talk about, you live in America now. You live in the United States.
Yes, and I was born here.
You were born here. You had double citizenship, but you did go to Singapore. You spent time in Singapore. Can you just tell a little bit about the difference in sort of education and culture, Singapore versus what you see in the United States?
Yes, I'll do my best. So Singapore, much more orderly and controlled and rigid. So for example, we wore school uniforms, right? In high school, don't you have,
you can wear whatever you want. Unless you go to a parochial school, yeah, or a private school, yeah.
I see. Right, yeah. So we all wore uniforms. There was no, the only, I don't know, there are no Singapore schools that you could wear your own clothes. Maybe the American schools, you could wear something else. But like the Singapore schools, you all had uniforms until you went to college. So anything before college, you had to wear a uniform. And you're not encouraged to speak up in class. So this was a big cultural shock. Yeah, when I came to America for college, and now all of a sudden you get participation points for speaking up in class. In Singapore, you got scolded for talking in class, right? And there's a saying in Chinese that the head that sticks out gets executed.
Wow.
So you don't really try to stick out in Singapore culture. You try to toe the party line and blend in. I guess you could stick out, you know, academically or in sports, but generally speaking, there's a sentiment that you don't want to stand out too much. I was considered extremely naughty, extremely rebellious in high school. But I was like a model student in America. I was a teaching assistant twice, outstanding major award, Phi Beta Kappa, magna cum laude. Like, professors love me. I have professors from college reaching out to me, like expressing their support for me. What's happening right now? So yeah, I was like a naughty student in Singapore, but only as far as my all-girls school was concerned. When I went to a co-ed school afterwards, so it was all-girls school until 16, and then 2 years of co-ed. In the co-ed school, once the boys were there, I was no longer considered a naughty student because the boys were naughtier than me.
In a boys' school, did your brother have the same experience as were they encouraged to speak out, or was it just women who weren't, or girls who were not encouraged to speak out, or was it everyone?
Oh, that's a very good question. That I don't know, because I don't know what my brother's experience was like in high school. I left for America before he even went to, when he was 8 years old. But yeah, it's a fascinating question. I'm not sure. But for me personally, because I went to an all-girls school for 11 years or so, and I didn't have boys to worry about, to even think about, I was pretty outspoken because I didn't think, oh, a boy's not going to like me.
Right, you don't
too
care.
Smart, a boy's I don't care, exactly. Yeah, and so I was always nominated in my class to do things like be in the debate team or be in the drama or be the editor of the school newsletter. So they would nominate me for these kind of things that would be given to people who are more outspoken.
And fearless, really.
And fearless, I guess that's a good point. Yeah, fearless.
It's so interesting because when you say that you didn't have the boys to worry about, you didn't, you know, there was no competition there, or I have to be cute and act feminine.
Right.
It made me think, you know, that's when I started doing stand-up. I had the same experience because I was gay. And I was like one of the guys because I really didn't care if they liked me. I just wanted to be a great comic. And I think I gained the respect of them because I was just working and not flirting and not to say that every female comic did that, but I really was not concerned at all. And I think that, you know, you make such a good point about, you know, you're the sort of outcast being this fearless, outspoken, intelligent. Did any of your teachers growing up embrace that? And I also wanted to know, were they all women teachers?
They were almost all women teachers. To your point about stand-up, before I go there is, sorry, I'm in a hotel now and the phone's ringing. So when I started comedy, because I had this mentality for so long of like, I'm equal to men, right? I was not told in my growing up years that, oh, girls have to be this way, boys have to be this way, because boys weren't in even the equation. And so I've never perceived myself as discriminated against in comedy. I don't think I'm like, oh, I don't get these opportunities because I'm a woman.
I felt the same way. Yeah.
Yeah. If I don't get something, I'll blame it on my lack of talent or skill, and then I'll work on getting better.
That's so interesting, because I always felt like that. I do now that I've been in the business so long, look back and realize, yeah, we weren't given the opportunities and we never got to work together.
Totally.
And that, but I never played that card.
Never. And exactly. Even now when people, we'll talk about what's happening later.
Oh, I can't. I love you.
It's that time of the year. Your vacation is coming up. You can already hear the beach waves, feel the warm breeze, relax, and think about work. You really, really want it all to work out while you're away. Monday.com gives you and the team that peace of mind. When all work is on one platform and everyone's in sync, things just flow wherever you are. Tap the banner to go to Monday.com.
You become an attorney and you work as, so you grow up and you speak Mandarin and English. And do you speak anything else?
I speak French too.
Fuck you.
You see, this is what I've been trying to tell the Asians. We say fuck you all the fucking time. And it's funny. You saw my clip and I was like, fuck you. And they got so upset.
Oh my God, because the fuck you. That's the problem. It's like you come to America and fuck you just means, oh, shut up. Oh, show off. Oh, go, you know. And it's sort of it's a compliment in a way when you're like, okay, great, go fuck yourself. Like, because, but they don't get that. But we'll get to that. But what do you think made you excel academically? I mean, because there's so many smart people, you know, who are outspoken and are sort of oppositional. Like, I don't have to do this fucking work. I'm smarter than this. What made you really focus on being the best academically?
Yeah, because of, I think growing up in Asia, you're kind of told that excelling academically is the way to success, right? So the Mark Zuckerbergs of America and the Bill Gates, who just like, right. I don't need academics, I can do my own thing. There were no stories right. like that in Asia. So I just thought there was just this one path. So of course I focused my brains on doing well in this academic path.
When you got to the United States, was it like a culture shock? I mean, you said that, yes, you were speaking up. They were like, I mean, the very beginning when you first were like, wait a minute, I can talk. Like, what? Was it really...
Nah.
Did it take getting used to, and did it change you?
100%. So when I first came to the States, I was getting penalized for not speaking up in class. I was like, right. what? For being a good student and like being quiet and listening to the teacher and like just absorbing everything, I'm now getting a B? That is unacceptable.
Just for not talking. Yeah.
10%, your 10% of your grade for all of these classes were participation points. So I actually had to bring it up to, I guess maybe this is the part of me that does speak out when I perceive something is a little unjust. So I did bring it up to the department. I was like, hey, you know, maybe you guys need to take into account cultural differences and maybe
Good.
Give people countries like mine some time to catch up. I'm not saying like have us not come to abide to your standard, like because this is America, because we should come abide to your standard, but maybe we can like show progress over time,
right.
like in the beginning, quieter. And they actually had a whole department meeting to discuss my
I love
point.
That.
I was pretty impressed. Right? Like they allowed for open discourse. They discussed my point. They took into consideration. In the end, they decided it was too difficult to do that. They had to have things standardized. But I was really appreciative that they still
right.
took into consideration my concerns. And then, so then now it's on me to step it up. So I like always raise my
right,
hand.
Right.
Always
and then
talk.
Everyone hates
yeah,
you.
Cause, like, no,
right. Because then they're all like, Justin, shut up. Okay. That's so great. That do you think that sort of that would have happened in Asia? Do you think that they would have had a meeting or just been like, shut the fuck up?
I highly doubt they would have had a meeting. I mean, maybe things have changed, you know, like this was a while I went to school in Asia in the 90s. So I think maybe Singapore, at least, which prides itself on being a more westernized right. country, might actually have changed somewhat. But at the time that I was in school, definitely not. I was so naughty in school. I remember my classmates who would go to the teacher's room. That's where the teachers would hang out in between classes. And there was one day where she saw all the teachers surrounding one teacher, and that teacher was going pointing to a photo of me. This is Justin Chiao. And all the other teachers were like, oh. And my sister, who's younger than me, my sister would get the blowback from being my sister, where teachers assume she was a naughty kid just because she was my sister.
Did your parents ever get called in, like, listen, you got to control your kid? Or
yeah, my dad did have to get called in at least one time. That's the one time that I do remember, he did have to come in.
I got in so much trouble during school all the time for this just for being funny, you know, or just imitating the teacher or whatever. It was just, but not for being the biggest brain in the class. Okay. So you then decide to become a lawyer. How did you get, what made you want to become a lawyer or study law?
That one was more, well, my aunt and uncle are lawyers. And I hadn't really experienced, but I did apply to law school. So for college, I was choosing between America or going to London to study law, because law is an undergraduate degree in the British system. But I was like, do I really want to study law for my undergraduate years? So I don't want to come to America and study the liberal arts, where you can study about philosophy, astrology, anything you want. I was like, that sounded so much more intellectually exciting to me. So I chose America. But I guess law was always in the background, right? The fact that I had already applied to law school as an undergrad. And then when I graduated from college, I was doing this entry-level job. I was like, wow, this is like mind-numbing. I'm getting dumber by the day. And I was looking at other jobs, but I saw that you needed a graduate degree. I mean, unless you went to an Ivy League school, you needed a graduate degree to like really get a more interesting job. So I was looking at a couple of things. It was either psychology to study to become a psychologist, or international relations to go into international relations. Now with this current story, I'm like, yeah, I did not have a career in diplomacy at all.
That's hilarious. Yeah.
And then the third option was law, you know, with my outspokenness and proficiency
and the debating,
with the language.
Yeah.
Debating, right? A little bit of an argumentative nature, intelligence. So I was in Washington, D.C. at the time, and Georgetown Law was like one of the best law schools in the country. Yeah, I was like, oh, let's just apply to Georgetown Law and see what happens.
Right, and get right in.
And just get right in.
I love you.
I love how you didn't say fuck you this time, but you see, fuck you.
Yeah,
and I love
go
you.
Fuck
I like
yourself. Okay, so you get into Georgetown Law and you become a corporate lawyer.
I did, yeah, mergers and acquisitions, private equity, and capital markets.
And how, okay, I'm going to tell you a story. I have, just because I'm going to preface my question with this story. So my dentist is this incredible, she's incredible, but she went to Harvard Law School and she was in Barack and Michelle Obama's class. She also went to their church. She's African American, but that doesn't really matter. But I'm just saying, she went to law school at Harvard and became a corporate lawyer and was dead inside. She became dead inside. Mm-hmm. She's like, I'm not helping anyone. I don't feel like.
Yeah.
And then I think her father was a dentist, and she went to NYU and became a dentist. And now she's a dentist and she's happy. But I wonder, did you have any of those kinds of feelings when you were doing this sort of rich people law and corporate law?
Yes. I mean, definitely there was the sense of, wow, I'm just like, all my efforts are going into making some company richer, enriching the bottom line of some company, and I guess it's shareholders. But also, Judy, there were many a times when I would be like, I just wish I could just get hit by a bus and be in the hospital for
just
2 months
rest.
So I can just lie down for 2 months. And I remember because I had a secretary, we had secretaries helping us. So every time it hit 5:30, all the secretaries would get up and leave. And I was like, I would just love to be a secretary. You could just leave at 5:30. You know, my day had just begun, like 5:30 p.m. was still like early. I would have to work at least another 5, 6, maybe even 12 more hours.
It's crazy. Hey everyone, did you know that Fast Growing Trees is the biggest online nursery in the United States with more than 10,000 different kinds of plants and over 2 million happy customers in the United States? And I'm one of them. You're listening to one of them. Fast Growing Trees has everything you could possibly want, like fruit trees, palm trees, evergreens, house plants, and so much more. Whatever you're interested in, they have it for you. Find the perfect fit for your climate and your space. Fast Growing Trees makes it easy to order online, and your plants are shipped directly to your door in 1 to 2 days. And along with their 30-day Alive and Thrive guarantee, they offer free plant consultation forever. Forever. I just want you to know that I just got off a plane and I walked in my apartment. What was the first thing I did? Is I came in and said hi to Avi, my fig tree. I'm telling you, and I have Yael, which is another plant, but Fast Growing Trees has changed my atmosphere here in my apartment. You don't need a lot of space, but they do have, you know, they have stuff for outdoor spaces, but I live in an apartment, and I'm telling you, Avi and Yael, yes, they're both Jewish names, Hebrew, the space looks so much better, and I just had a conversation with Avi. Like, I was like, I missed you. I love having living things here. It's very, very, I don't know, it's made this more of a home. It's the best, and Elisa has some too, and she loves them, and she talks to them too, but she got that from me. Anyway, check out Fast Growing Trees. You need to be around plant life. This spring, they have the best deals online, up to half off on select plants and other deals. And listeners to our show get an additional 15% off their first purchase when using the code JUDYGOLD, J-U-D-Y-G-O-L-D, at checkout. That's an additional 15% off at fastgrowingtrees.com using the code JUDYGOLD at checkout. Fastgrowingtrees.com, code JUDYGOLD. Offer is valid for a limited time. Terms and conditions may apply. You're welcome.
Crazy.
When you were growing up, did you get to watch any sort of stand-up, or did you have access to, well, so you're in the 90s. I mean, that was like the start of the whole cable comedy boom. Did you have access to any of the American shows or comedians?
Zero access. I did not see American stand-up comedy until I started comedy, which
that
is wild.
That is crazy.
The only stand-up I got to see was this one comedian called Kumar, which was a drag show, and she would just do jokes and then do some kind of drag show. And this is the very person that has
I know, I read
me.
That. That,
right,
that.
Yeah, don't tell me exactly what the person said. I just saw the headlines. I was like,
yeah,
I'm not reading
the
shit.
Kumar, I didn't read it either because it just pissed me off. And it's like, you know, here you are, you know, you're out, you're gay, you were doing drag. Like, who the fuck do you think you are? First of all, every comedian should be supporting you.
100%, yeah.
This situation it needs to get as much, I mean, you want to give it, of course, the audience doesn't even know what we're talking about, but Jocelyn said a joke and now is in deep shit, but not really, because we're going to protect her, but this is all about cancel culture. But yeah, that really pissed me off. So you growing up, you have every sort of characteristic of a future stand-up, with the, you know, getting in trouble at school, being really, really bright, outspoken, and yet you never saw any stand-up comedy from the American perspective.
Zero.
Did you watch any comedic TV shows? Did you laugh? Did your family laugh?
I don't think my family laughed, but I I did see Friends, which I adore. That was a big one. We watched Seinfeld. Okay. So we have very clean comedy in Singapore. Like Beverly Hills 90210 was banned in Singapore, God. I heard. Madonna was banned. She wasn't allowed. So yeah, that's the kind of culture I grew up in. A lot of censorship.
Right. It's just fucking ridiculous. Okay. I read one article. You worked 6 years as a corporate lawyer.
Yeah, that was wrong.
I read another that said 3 years as a corporate lawyer. So,
oh, okay.
And you said that, is this true that you went to Columbia for another degree in 2012? Is that bullshit lie?
That is a lie. But however, I did share with my friends on Facebook that I was seeing a guy who has 5 degrees for Columbia.
Oh, my God.
He's an astrophysicist, such a genius. And he was inviting me to the Columbia University reunion. And I said, I didn't go to Columbia. Why would I go? He goes, just take one of my degrees.
Oh, my God.
What a
Wait,
sex, right?
This guy had 5 degrees.
5 degrees
and
from Columbia
And he was an astrophysicist. All right, I'm going to ask an inappropriate question. Was he good in bed?
He was the only guy that's managed to make me come from my entire life. Yeah, so he put that freaking astrophysicist.
Yeah, he knows what he's doing.
Degree to some good use. He knows what he's doing. Yeah.
Wow, that's amazing. So that physics class.
I can only date guys with 5 degrees.
Wow, that physics class really helped him. He knows exactly what he's doing. Okay.
That's really helping. Maybe one of his degrees is in biology.
Oh my God, 5 degrees. How old was he?
He was only in his 30s when I met him.
What am I doing with my life?
Yeah.
Okay. So you enrolled in a comedy class. Is that correct? At Gotham.
Yes, correct. Yeah, actually, that was my first foray. I didn't continue after that, but that was my first class.
So what was the impetus to say, I gotta get into this stand-up situation?
It was two separate times. The first time was after I had already left the law, I was trying to figure out what I want to do in my life. And I did this class called She Creates Change for Women in Life Transitions, trying to figure out their calling.
How old are you at this
and
point?
The end of this, I was about 29 at this time. Yeah. And at the end of the class, we had this thing called a calling party where all the girls stood in a semicircle, one girl in the middle, and everyone just shout out what they thought her calling was. And this one girl, Anna, she was like, Jocelyn, you're so freaking funny. I want to see you do stand-up comedy. Every time you speak in class, everybody cracks up stand-up comedy. And it was like this light bulb moment. I was like, oh, what a great idea. And so and I went home that night and there was an email from Gotham saying free intro to stand-up comedy. I was like, this is a sign. So I went for the free intro and rolled in the class. And in my graduation show, I did so well that the host, Karen Bergen,
was Karen.
Like, hey.
I was going to ask you if it was Karen, my friend Karen. Yeah.
Yeah.
She loves you.
Yeah,
she loves you.
Yeah. Oh, she does. Yeah. Oh my God. I love her too. Yeah, so she was my first teacher, and she was the host of the show, and she said, after I did my set, she goes, can y'all believe that was her first time? So I did well, but Judy, I'm so Singaporean in my brain still that I was like, well, I took a class. Of course I was
going to do
well. Like, now as a comedian, I'm like, it's not usual to do well on your first time on
It's
stage.
Funny. Yeah, so, but it's also, I mean, you must have seen with the other students that it's not... It doesn't, you can't learn how to be funny. You cannot learn it. You can learn how to create a set or take what you know and make jokes, but you can't, you're either funny or you're not funny. Karen, and it was so great you had Karen because she was also a lawyer.
Lawyer, exactly. It was perfect. Yeah. But because I didn't take it seriously, I was like, yeah, you know, I took a class. Of course, I'd be funny. And also, I didn't catch, like, the stand-up bug then. I was like, all right, you know, been there, done that. This is okay. Doesn't feel like it's my calling. So I didn't continue for another, like, a few more years until I was in Boston now working as a consultant. A journalist from the Boston Globe invited me on a date to see Aziz Ansari. This was the first time I saw stand-up comedy in its, like,
full form.
Yeah. Stand-up comedy. In pure form, yeah, not Kumar, that drag queen. So it was halfway through Aziza's set, I started crying, like emotional tears. Why am I crying? And then my inner voice was like, this is what I want to do for the rest of my life. I was like, are you out of your mind? I was like this high-paying six-figure consultant right. in Boston, about to go to Singapore on an expatriate package and everything. So that's when it really started. And then I dismissed it, you know, because of my lawyer's right. consultant, where I like to be practical. And then I saw a second stand-up comedy show at Gotham Comedy Club. John Lester is there. He's doing his set. And again, I'm crying. Right. I'm like, oh, my God. I'm like, why do you keep crying at a comedy show? And again, this is what I want to do. So
it's
that's
so amazing that you had that emotional reaction, because it was probably, I mean, I'm not a psychologist, but, you know, for someone who's told you are not allowed to have an opinion, and if you have one, keep it to yourself. And to see these, right. I mean, Aziz, Asian, John, African-American, you see these people speaking up and talking about their experiences. Yeah. I'm sure it was, I can't even imagine.
And getting rewarded for it with laughter right. and love, not getting your head cut
exactly.
off.
Exactly. When did you give up the corporate job and go full-blown stand up?
It was such a coincidence, Judy. So Aziz Ansari, John Lesser happened. And then right at the same time, the day before my birthday, the corporate job was like, your position in Singapore is no longer. So it was like, boom. The very next day on my birthday, I did my first comedy.
Wow. So
yeah, in Boston, the place of my birth.
Blessing in disguise.
It was like I birthed
Where again, did you do it? Where'd you do it?
I did it at Tavern at the End of the World in Boston.
That's fucking great. How did you do that time?
You know, I did well. And here's the thing. I'm actually, maybe this all had the crazy journey of like having to go from New York to Boston and everything. Now I see maybe it made sense, because the Boston open mic scene was very supportive. I was getting laughs. I was confirmation I was a funny person. And I come to New York and I do my first comedy open mic in New York, and it was like dead, right? Pretty dead. I was like, wow, New York mics are so hard. And the comedian I was talking to said, this is the best mic we have in New York City. I was like, this is the best. So I might have just quit comedy had I started New York City. So you're a pretty supportive place to start right. in, even for just a few months. And then in New York City, I already had I should be pretty funny. That's when I had I built enough confidence to just plow through right. the toughness of the New York
well,
scene.
Well, yeah, it's funny because I remember my first set, I got huge laughs. And then I had the first set, I did one at college, and then I did one in a club and I got huge laughs. It's sort of the second time you do it that the spark can fizzle. But I mean, getting that first laugh and feeling like I never felt anything like that before. And just knowing that that's what you're meant to do. I mean, I think that's what your emotional response was, like, oh my God, because most people in their life never figure out what they're fucking meant to do, you know?
Yeah, how lucky are we, right? There's this great quote that I read during my like life transition, trying to figure out what I want to do, by Stephen Cope. And he was talking about your dharma. And the dharma is like I think it's the Sanskrit term for your calling, right? And he said, your dharma, if you do not follow it, it will kill you. But if you do follow it, it will save you. And how many times has comedy saved me from the darkest times in my life?
It's also that, I don't know if you feel, I'm sure you do, but when you're, I mean, I've been, you know, I suffer from depression and all the shit that we all have to deal with. But when I walk into the cellar, it's like I'm at home. It's like, okay.
Yes, yes.
Like I can have the worst day, but then I walk in and I'm like, this is where I'm meant to be. And these are the people I'm meant to be around, you know?
And to have gone through this stuff, like to be in so much hot soup because of my craft, and to then go to the comedy show and now talk about what's happening to me and getting the laughter is so healing. I'm like, wow, this is really what I'm meant to be. I remember when I was a consultant in Boston, we did the MOG, storytelling competition. So our company actually sponsored us, like gave us free tickets to the MOG because they wanted us to build our public speaking storytelling skills. None of the consultants ever got up to tell a story, but I did, right? Being the performer inside of me that I really am. And my colleague was like, wow, it's like you're at home on stage. It's like you belong there.
I feel more comfortable on stage than I do. Like, I'd rather stand on stage with a mic than sit at a fucking party talking about bullshit with people, you know?
Oh, 100%. I hate small talk.
The worst. Okay. Thank you so much for listening to Kill Me Now with this week's guest, Jocelyn Chia, part one. Next week will be part two. It continues on very interesting. Very fascinating, interesting. I say the word fascinating a lot, but too fucking bad. Kill Me Now is produced by Laura Vogel, edited by Colin Schmeling, and marketed and everything else done by Brittany Joe Sowards. Richmond. If you haven't purchased my book, yes, I can say that when they cover the comedians, we're all in trouble, then you're an asshole. And you can. You can, or get the audiobook, which is me, and it's fantastic. Yeah, I said fantastic again. So there's that. Yes, I can say that. The show hopefully will be touring next year where you live. But if you want to come see me perform, because I'm very funny, I do comedy, you can see me at the Post Office Cabaret. Well, it's the Post Office Cafe and Cabaret, but I'm not working in the fucking cafe part. I am there. It's in Provincetown every Sunday and Tuesday at 8:30 p.m. and on Thursdays at 7 p.m. That's at the Post Office Cabaret, Cafe and Cabaret, whatever the fuck. It's a great room and it has a really good sound system and I love everyone who works there. Also, I will be at in Montreal. I would be in Montreal at the Montreal Comedy Festival, July 18th to the 28th. And I will be there for 10 days performing every night. And I'm 60 years old and I'll be in a hotel for 10 days. Okay? 10 days in a hotel. So I'm going to be in a bad mood. So that'll be make for a really good podcast that week. And also, there's going to be a lot of great comics up there, and I'm bringing my podcast equipment, and we're going to record, and then we're going to put it on the show. All right, I have to go get ready and take a shower, because I have a stand-up show this evening at the Post Office Cabaret. But I want to say thank you all for listening. Happy Pride. I met a lovely person in Baltimore who I posted. She wrote about how... she came out at 12 and she used to sneak in the basement to watch my stand-up comedy and then came out at 12 and practically ruined her bat mitzvah and I love her. Okay? So I had that. That's posted on my Insta. Insta. See how cool I am? Even though I'm 60. So check that out. I love you all. Thank you for listening. I don't have time right now to read names, but I will. I will. Don't think I'm not thinking about you. And... enjoy the rest of the Pride. Enjoy July 4th. It's coming up the weekend. And that's it. I appreciate you. And as we always say, so long.